Hello. This is the California Report podcast. I'm Rachel Miro. As temperatures spiked over the weekend, wildfires broke out across Northern California. One of the largest, the Pawnee Fire in Lake County, is raging over more than 7,700 acres at last count, and it's forced the mandatory evacuation of the Spring Valley area, a community of several thousand residents, a little over 100 miles north of San Francisco. KQED's Hope McKenney visited an evacuation center Sunday to file this report.
At the Moose Lodge Evacuation Center in Clear Lake Oaks, about 300 people sat around in the hot sun, lying on cots or setting up tents and campers, as smoke loomed on the mountains behind them. Anxious and worried, residents of this small community are still reeling from the recent Sulphur Fire, part of the Northern California firestorm that erupted in six counties last October, killing more than 40 people. Dale Carnathan with the Lake County Sheriff's Office says they are particularly concerned with strong winds and having enough water to fight these events that have become all too familiar.
Well, this is our fourth year in a row where we've had significant fires that have caused evacuations, loss of structures, and significant expense to the state and the county.
Officials have asked people to reduce their water usage so there's enough to fight the fire. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKenney in Lake County.
As of last night, CAL FIRE had the Pawnee Fire at 0% containment. President Donald Trump tweeted on immigration again over the weekend, writing, quote, "We cannot allow all of these people to invade our country. When somebody comes in, we must immediately, with no judges or court cases, bring them back from where they came from," unquote. But if the president is now publicly pondering an extra-legal approach, the Department of Homeland Security is moving to respond to mass protests over the forcible separation of immigrant parents and their children. The agency has announced it's reunified 522 children and plans to keep on going. KQED's Julie Small has more about an expected ruling by a federal judge in San Diego on the other children still being held in facilities.
President Trump's June 22nd executive order ends the separation of undocumented children from parents who are being prosecuted or facing deportation for illegal entry into the U.S. But attorney Lee Gallant with the American Civil Liberties Union says the order says nothing about families already torn apart by the policy.
Children are crying themselves to sleep, clinging to pictures of their parents. And, you know, these are the ones who even know what's going on. Some of the kids are just babies less than a year old.
Gallant wants U.S. District Judge Dana Sabraw to order Homeland Security to return all children to their parents within a month, even sooner for infants and toddlers. The ACLU filed a complaint earlier this year seeking strict limits on the government's separation of immigrant families, a practice attorneys argue that has become frequent and arbitrary under the Trump administration. The judge is expected to rule on the issue this week. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small in San Diego.
KPCC's Leslie Beristain Rojas reached one mother whose son was taken away.
21-year-old Claudia came to the U.S. from Guatemala in March with her infant son, seeking asylum. She asked her last name not be used because she's afraid she'll be deported. Her husband had arrived a month earlier with their 3-year-old. Claudia learned both had been detained. She didn't realize they'd been separated, part of the Trump administration's strict immigration enforcement now called its zero-tolerance policy. She and her baby were eventually released, but when she contacted her husband in detention, he told her their 3-year-old had been taken away. They took him, her husband told her on the phone. He begged her to find their son. Her son had been sent to a federal shelter, then to a foster home. It took about 6 weeks before he was released to his family in Van Nuys. She says her 3-year-old has been traumatized. She says he can't look at police or patrol cars. He says they took his papa. President Trump signed an executive order saying the detained families will now be held together. Meanwhile, thousands of children have not yet been reunified with their parents. For the California Report, I'm Leslie Beristain Rojas in Los Angeles.
We turn now to the California Report's own John Sepulveda, who's been reporting from the border in recent days. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rachel.
What have you seen over the past weekend?
I've seen some really heartbreaking things. The thing that's just standing out of my mind the most is that there were a group of women. One was from the Congo, 6 were from Honduras, and 4 were from Mexico. All had either lost husbands, had husbands who were killed, or husbands who were kidnapped, and who were trying to get away from their government forces, from drug runners. and they presented themselves for asylum yesterday in front of Customs and Border Protection officers, and the officer turned them away.
Did anybody you talked to mention a reason or give a reason for why they were turning people away at the border who were requesting asylum? One possibility might be space. There's not enough space to take in new asylum requests.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, that there's not enough space and there's not enough time. And that might be true, but that's not on the women who are being turned away. I mean, these are women who are literally living in the streets. They're living in dirty riverbed. There's a, you know, through the Tijuana River. And I'm not saying that that's not part of the hardship of life, which is something that I hear and I understand. But when they are presented, at the very least, they are supposed to get a number. They weren't even allowed to do that. And these people are being turned away. They're desperate. And then there are coyotes that come literally to this plaza and say, if you can round up $1,000, I can get you over. And that's when they're getting caught, put in detention centers, and up until, you know, recently separated from their families. It's a really vicious circle.
Federal officials say they're busy reuniting families now. Is that what you're seeing on the ground?
I think there has been some reunifications based on the conversations I've had with some attorneys. So these are people who were kind of in temporary custody, who hadn't actually been sent to detainment centers, like the one our listeners had heard in places like Tornillo in El Paso and other places. But for the 2,300 or so families who actually were put in detention centers, I don't see how that's possible, because we still know that lawyers who are contracted by the U.S. government to represent the children still, as of last night, don't know where all their clients are. So if they don't know where their clients are, that means the government doesn't know where their clients are. And if the government doesn't know where their clients are, it's hard to see how they're going to be able to hook them back up with their families.
John Sepulveda, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rachel.
This week, the California Report will be focusing on homelessness throughout the Golden State. For our first story, Anna Gorman with our partner Kaiser Health News tells us about one clinic that gets potential clients in the door by offering a welcoming place to take a shower.
Gregory Andrews sleeps in his Chevy, which he parks just outside a health center near Beverly Hills. Every weekday morning, he joins 24 people lined up to take a free shower. They come with backpacks, shopping carts, and tents.
Besides trying to find something healthy to eat, that's the next most important thing, is to take a shower. Keeps your self-esteem up.
Inside the Saban Community Clinic, staff members check the water temperature and get ready to hand out soap and shampoo. At 7:30 sharp, the doors open. Chanel Grooms, a caseworker, greets 60-year-old Andrews by name. He's one of her regulars.
May I have some towels, please?
There you go, sir.
As the showers get underway, Grooms keeps track on a clipboard.
Anybody seen Chris this morning? Okay, well, John, you might be next, because I don't know where Chris is.
Andrews became homeless 2 years ago after getting injured and losing his job. He's 6'3" and uses a cane. Not long after discovering the free showers, he went upstairs to see a doctor and a dentist. He also got enrolled in health insurance.
They just told me at the front desk, said, do you know you qualify for Medi-Cal? When I went upstairs, talked to one person, within 30 days, I had Medi-Cal.
Health clinics rarely offer showers, but Saban has done it for 3 decades.
The shower program really is a gateway into our other services.
Adam Friedman is Saban's chief marketing officer. He says some of the visitors have untreated mental illness and chronic disease.
You know, the whole goal is to build trust, so that after they start coming over a period of time, they will be open to seeing a therapist, getting their medical needs taken care of.
46-year-old Adam Henderson is another regular. He's been homeless for more than a decade. He was glad to find these showers and to visit the dentist upstairs. Still, he avoids the doctor.
If I'm in pain, then I'll go to see the doctor. But normally the pains that I have are from basketball injuries, so I know how to deal with those.
While homeless shelters typically have showers, the beds are often full, and some people don't want to go. But for those, like Andrews, who do, a caseworker is there to help.
She found me shelter, and I was in there like 9.5 months.
Only about a third of those who come for the showers also get treated at the clinic. But showering itself has health benefits, like avoiding infection and keeping wounds clean. For Andrews, it's just a good way to start the day.
Nice warm shower makes anybody feel good, right, guys?
More than 50,000 people in Los Angeles County are homeless, up almost 50% in just 6 years. With that growth, even more people will need somewhere to shower. For the California Report, I'm Anna Gorman in Los Angeles.
Earlier this month, the Orange County Board of Supervisors passed a resolution officially opposing a proposed mobile needle exchange. The group that proposed the exchange had been operating out of the Santa Ana Civic Center before the city shut the program down. Local and regional officials are at odds with the concept, as KQED's Michelle Wiley explains.
While the county has no jurisdiction over the approval of the mobile exchange, the resolution was submitted to the California Department of Public Health. That's the state agency currently considering the application. And if that doesn't work, Chairman of the Board of Supervisors Andrew Doe says he's considering filing a lawsuit to stop the exchange. But why is there so much controversy over what many public health officials agree is an effective method of preventing blood-borne disease? Here's Supervisor Doe.
It is a public health risk because of the number of needles that would be given out, and there's no way to track them and to make sure that they are returned for proper disposal.
The California Department of Public Health recommends a needs-based approach to needle exchange, meaning people can get as many syringes as they request. According to Dallas Augustine, an official with the Orange County Needle Exchange Program, they place limits on the number of needles they give out.
Because we heard the concerns about needle litter, we actually went against CDPH recommendations and have an N plus 20 model, which means that we give as many as people bring in plus 20.
Augustine says they feel they've been treated as scapegoats by Orange County officials and blamed for problems associated with homelessness. Though we signed on to the resolution against the exchange, Supervisor Todd Spitzer says he still wants to know what the county is planning to do to address the issue of used needles.
The last thing I want is somebody sharing needles.
The public comment period on the mobile needle exchange ends today. The California Department of Public Health has until July 25th to approve the application. For the California Report, I'm Michelle Wiley.
And finally, we have an update on the Pawnee Fire burning in Lake County. In the light of day, CAL FIRE is reporting the blaze is now at 8,200 acres, with 22 structures destroyed and 0% containment. That's the California Report for Monday, June 25th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. Have a great day.